It is 10:30, and would like us to reconvene for a meeting. So, Mr. Robertson, you introduced the topic, so we will proceed with staff presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Wolf. Okay, so item 15 is the Salinas River Stream Maintenance Program Clean Water Action Section 401 Water Quality Certification. This is an information item on the Clean Water Act Section 401 Water Quality Certification for the Salinas River 2016 to 2025 Stream Maintenance Program. The project involves channel maintenance in the Salinas River in Monterey County for the purpose of flood control. The purpose of this item is for the board to give staff input on the project and the certification before the certification is finalized and issued by me, likely prior to the next water board meeting in September. John Rohrbaugh of our staff will provide the water board staff presentation, followed by a presentation by representatives from the Monterey County Water Resources Agency.
Good morning, Chairman Wolf and board members. Thank you for this opportunity to present this informational item on the Salinas River 2016-2025 Stream Maintenance Program. My name is John Rohrbaugh, and I serve in the 401 certification unit here at the Regional Coastal, Central Coast Water Board. The Monterey County Water Resources Agency is seeking Clean Water Act Section 401 Water Quality Certification to conduct channel maintenance activities in the Salinas River in Monterey County. The purpose of this presentation is to provide information about the project and conditions staff has incorporated into the certification. Staff's goals are to help you understand how the project meets the agency's goals for flood protection while still meeting the Central Coast Water Board's goals for beneficial use protection, that the project has been tested through a successful demonstration project with lessons learned incorporated into the current project, and also that the project is an improvement over the 2003-2008 program. Staff's goal is to receive input from board members on the project prior to issuing the water quality certification. Unless otherwise directed by the board, the executive officer will issue the certification by August 31st, following the typical path for issuing water quality certifications. This will allow the agency to begin implementing the project on schedule prior to the coming rainy season. The presentation includes the following elements: a summary of key project components, a discussion of the project design and project activities, a description of the project impacts and compensatory mitigation, a discussion of some of the benefits of the project, a description of the project management measures, a summary of improvements over the 2003-2008 program achieved by the current project, and a summary of the public and certification development process staff has followed. This satellite photograph shows the Salinas River in Monterey County. Monterey Bay and Highway 101 are up here in the upper left. The little town of San Ardo that you were discussing a few minutes ago is down here in the lower right. The Camp Roberts buildings are off the map to the bottom. The river itself is within this white oval. It's hard to see at this scale, but it roughly parallels Highway 101 along this area there. The project involves channel maintenance in the Salinas River between River Miles 2 and 94, from the Highway 1 bridge at the upper left to south of San Ardo in the lower right. The purpose of the project is to increase flow capacity in the Salinas River to reduce flood risk to surrounding lands. Key project components include a science-based design that mimics the natural channel form and maintenance of secondary channels within the main channel. The image to the right here shows a short section of the Salinas River with two secondary channels, the purple areas here, that the agency will maintain. As you can see, that secondary channels are flow channels within the river's main channel, but outside the low flow channel, which is this bare sandy strip that you can see running down the middle of the main channel. Secondary channels will start flowing as the water level rises in the river and can no longer be contained within the low flow channel. Let's see here, what do we do? Other key project components include vegetation and sediment management, mitigation for unavoidable impacts, project management, including monitoring, reporting, and adaptive management, and a 10-year permit term with a built-in reassessment of the project and certification after 5 years. Would like to discuss a few of these components in more detail. The project design mimics the natural braided channel form of the Salinas River by identifying secondary channels for maintenance. First, secondary channels are chosen to avoid high-value habitat as much as possible, such as the low-flow channel and the forested banks. Okay. Second, the design focuses maintenance activities within the secondary channels, preserving most of the riparian habitat within the main channel. A few images will make this design approach more clear. You saw this image a moment ago. Again, the Salinas River is within this white oval. The project encompasses 92 miles of the Salinas River between river miles 2 and 94. Within these boundaries, the main channel contains approximately 23,000 acres of habitat, 12,000 acres of which is high-value native riparian habitat. These are big numbers. But if we zoom in to a smaller portion of the project here, we see the outer edges of the main channel marked in yellow lines, and they trace the outside of the riparian corridor. The low flow channel is just visible. If you see this faint line right here, that is a steady pointer, I'll tell you. Anyway, so that's the low flow channel. And the blue, green, and red lines are the boundaries of actual proposed secondary channel maintenance areas. So you can see that within the main channel area, the secondary channel areas, the maintenance areas, actually take up only a very small part of that area. If we zoom in even closer to, say, this area here, we can see even more clearly how much of the main channel area, the riparian corridor, the project avoids. All of the maintenance will take place within these channels, not just this year, but for all 10 years of the permit's term. So all of this area out here will not be impacted by this project. So this really limits the amount of impact and illustrates the avoidance that the project has incorporated. So we won't see the widespread vegetation and sediment management activities as were approved in the past. This picture on the right was an aerial photo taken back in 2009, and I bring it up now just to illustrate the difference. It's not going to look like that anymore under this program.
So the low flow channel is...
In this picture, the low flow channel runs through here. And under the 2003-2008 program, the agency was required to keep about a 10-foot band of riparian vegetation along the low flow channel. But the certification allowed removal of everything else with some limitations. Not only do secondary channels preserve most of the riparian habitat, their locations are also chosen to avoid high-value habitat as much as possible. The image to the right here helps us to see this. The main channel boundaries are here and here. The low-flow channel is evident here, this, the bare sandy riverbed. And the purple areas are secondary channels. The vegetation in the main channel varies from what looks like from the aerial photo to be riparian forest along the outer banks to what's very small vegetation and even a lot of bare ground areas, as you can see along the low flow channel here. And I want you to notice that the secondary channels have been placed in that bare earth area. They haven't been placed in the riparian forest. They haven't been placed in the low flow channel. So they've been placed in the lowest value habitat in this section of the river. In addition, the project will preserve mature trees as much as possible, even if the trees are within the boundaries of a secondary channel. Prior to maintenance, agency representatives will walk each maintenance area, and if mature trees are present, may move the secondary channel slightly to avoid the trees, if possible, without increasing flood risk or project impacts, or may simply prune the trees, lower branches of the trees, and leave the trees in place. After all of these steps are taken to avoid high-value habitat as much as possible, the project will still remove the vegetation within the designated secondary channel areas, but again, not anywhere outside of those areas. Let's see. Seem to have missed something. I'm sorry, I seem to have lost something here. Okay. Let's go here. Oh, okay, sorry. All right, so the vegetation management approach is different in two selective treatment areas. This image illustrates the different maintenance approach. Again, the low flow channel area is indicated here. It's wetted in this picture, so it's dark rather than pale, as we've seen in previous pictures. And this yellow dashed line that is very faint marks the edge of the low flow channel and the 10-foot buffer that was required to be maintained in the past. The colored polygons that you can see here indicate the conceptual maintenance areas. And the legend to the side over here indicates the type of activities that occur, limbing large trees, doing some sediment management, maybe removing a tree that obstructs flow. So in these two selective treatment areas, maintenance will occur in a patchwork fashion illustrated in this conceptual design. What that means is that the agency would conduct maintenance within these colored polygons, but not across the whole length of the stretch of the river. The reason for the patchwork approach is in the selective treatment areas is that the river is too narrow in these areas to fit a secondary channel outside of the low flow channel without increasing impact by going into mature forest. Therefore, some maintenance will be conducted within the low flow channel, but will be conducted in this patchwork fashion to protect as much of the low flow channel as possible. Sediment can be removed from any of the designated maintenance areas, but will be limited to no more than 2 foot depth in any location. The project could impact approximately 864 acres of habitat within the Salinas River main channel. More than half of this impact, this habitat is native riparian habitat. The actual amount of vegetation removal could be lower than the maximum allowed due to the voluntary nature of the maintenance program, as some landowners may opt not to conduct the permitted activities. The Salinas River supports threatened South Central California coast steelhead and is a migratory corridor between Monterey Bay and the upper watershed. Fish migration is a designated beneficial use of the lower Salinas River. Staff believes the project protects fish passage and habitat conditions that support steelhead. This conclusion is based on several conversations staff initiated with National Marine Fisheries Service about the project and its potential to affect steelhead. NMFF staff found that the demonstration project would not adversely affect steelhead or their habitat. Some aspects of the current project differ from the demonstration project, and NMFF staff is still evaluating some of those elements for potential threats to steelhead. And staff will continue to be in conversation with NMFF staff to see what they turn up and will modify the certification accordingly. Now, Bill Stevens, who's on staff with NMFS, was planning to be here today. We had assured the board that he would. He was looking forward to being here. He called me this morning to let me know that a crisis has come up in their office and he wasn't able to make it. So I wanted to let you know that, and we can address any other questions that you have about the fish protection issue later on. So the project includes compensatory mitigation for impacts to high-value habitat. The agency will replace trees removed by the project of replacement ratios up to 3-to-1 for mature cottonwoods and other native trees. To ensure the success of mitigation plantings, the certification will also include requirements for plant survival, survival without supplementary irrigation, and requirements for growth. The agency will also remove Arundo, following best practices and in compliance with pesticide regulations. The image on the right here, if I can squeeze it past John Robertson's nose, is shows some Arundo. Now these are actually human beings down here. So this is a tall and very robust stand of Arundo and shows you what it looks like. Arundo is an invasive species that takes over riparian areas, overwhelming native species, and reducing habitat function and diversity. If all project impacts are realized, the project could remove as much as or more than 350 acres of Arundo. Arundo removal requires repeated treatments over several years to be effective, so the certification requires monitoring and retreatment of Arundo removal areas for 5 years. The agency will also restore temporary impacts to pre-project conditions. The project reduces flood depths and the number of acres flooded. The image on the right shows the extent of flooding determined by the hydraulic model for a 10-year flood event. The darker colors represent deeper water, and the darkest blue line here, of course, is the low flow channel of the river. This location is near the downstream end of the project. You can see in the inset over here, this is Marina, a corner of Marina, and this is the airport, actually, right there.
Can you show us the main channel boundaries?
It's tough to show you in this picture because they're underwater. But I would expect that you expect to see them along kind of this darker shade of blue down through here. So we're seeing some flooding here in adjacent areas. Now, for a 10-year event, the project will reduce flood depth between one half and 2 feet across the length of the project, and will reduce the number of acres flooded by more than 1,000 for the whole project. So this is a pre-project condition. If we compared this with the post-project condition, according to the model, you'd see less blue color here. In addition to the project design, which protects resources by avoiding high-value habitat as much as possible, the project includes management measures that increase the project's protection of beneficial uses. Staff oversight of the project will also ensure it is effective at protecting beneficial uses. First, the agency will submit an annual work plan each year describing all maintenance proposed that year. Staff will review each work plan for compliance with the certification, and staff approval is required before work can begin. The agency will also submit all adaptive management proposals. Now, adaptive management could come into play if secondary channels should happen to shift location during high flow events, which is not uncommon in a braided river like the Salinas River. When this occurs, the agency will evaluate field conditions to determine whether a maintenance activity should continue in the secondary channel that they've applied to maintain, or if they should shift maintenance to the secondary channel that the river has created on its own. All adaptive management proposals will be subject to staff review and approval before any maintenance can begin. The agency will also conduct pre-maintenance surveys before maintenance begins. Pre-maintenance surveys will ground truth the secondary channel locations and may modify them where doing so will avoid high-value habitat without increasing flood risk. For instance, agency staff might find a stand of trees in the middle of a designated channel and find that the channel can be shifted slightly, one way or the other, in order to avoid those trees without increasing flood risk. Yeah.
While you're on this slide,
yes.
Can you be a little more specific? When you say staff, are you referring to the agency staff, the applicant staff, or are you talking about water board staff?
That's a good question. When I use the word staff alone, I mean water board staff.
Okay. All right. Staff review.
So the annual work plan, all adaptive management proposals will be reviewed by Water Board staff and must be approved by Water Board staff before maintenance can begin.
Okay. And is Water Board staff going to go into the field as part of their review before they approve anything?
Well, when we see adaptive management proposals, yes, our intention is to go in the field and see what the agency is seeing and what they're proposing, see it on the ground, because it's, you can see some things in aerial photographs, but it's tough to tell in much detail what's going on.
Okay.
Okay. The agency will also provide training for all personnel involved with the maintenance program, and will perform monitoring and reporting activities such as daily visual monitoring of maintenance activities. The agency will submit an annual report following each maintenance season, and Water Board staff will review annual reports to determine the project's compliance with the certification. The certification also requires development of a long-term effectiveness assessment plan. The plan will evaluate the project's overall effectiveness at achieving anticipated flood reduction benefits, while also protecting beneficial uses and habitat function. Finally, while the permit term is 10 years, the certification requires a project reassessment after 5 years. The review will assess maintenance activities, mitigation efforts, and monitoring data to determine the effectiveness of the program at achieving the projected flood reduction benefits while ensuring environmental protection. Again, as I mentioned, staff will also inspect maintenance and mitigation areas in the field and will consult with staff from other regulatory agencies, and then may amend the certification as needed or as indicated for the second 5 years of the permit term. Now, many of you are familiar with the demonstration project, which the agency has been implementing over the last 2 years. The demonstration project is the first phase of the current project, and it follows the project, the design, maintenance, management, and mitigation approaches of the current project. The demonstration project was the first phase of the current project and was developed as a pilot program for the current project. The demonstration project is based on the same design as the current project. The agency has implemented the demonstration project for the last 2 years in 11.5 miles of the Salinas River near Gonzales and Chualar. The image to the right shows the general location of the demonstration project within the larger scope of the entire project. The demonstration project has provided valuable insights into the project's protection of water quality and beneficial uses. It provided an opportunity to test and refine the project management approach and its effectiveness at reducing environmental impacts. And it allowed Water Board staff to observe maintenance activities and their impacts on the river. The agency has incorporated lessons learned from the demonstration project into the larger project, and staff has incorporated them into the certification. The 2016 certification incorporates the demonstration project. Ongoing maintenance activities in the demonstration project reaches will be covered under the 2016 certification, and all mitigation requirements for impacts under the demonstration project will shift into the 2016 certification. Now, these photos of the demonstration project were taken immediately after the first season of maintenance in 2014. I hesitated because there was actually a caption of this photo that is missing from the slide. It got cut off. So the bottom photo shows a secondary channel area where it connects with the low flow channel of the river. We are standing in the secondary channel looking upstream. Now, they're hard to see, but right in here in these trees, there are two people walking in the low flow channel. There's actually about a 6 to 8 foot drop right where you see this line of yellow tape, and it drops down into the low flow channel there. You can see we're standing in a lot of cut vegetation. This is mostly arundel that has been mowed. But what I want you to notice is two things. One, the area we're standing will fill with water only after the low flow channel fills up. So the water's gonna rise, and then we're gonna have wet feet. But I also want you to notice that in this area over here, we see what looks to be a young cottonwood and some willows that are actually in the middle of the secondary channel connection point, but were left in place by the agency because of their higher value as habitat. So this kind of on-the-ground additional avoidance of high-value habitat is integrated into this project. And there is widespread eagerness among agency staff as well as landowners to do this and preserve this vegetation as much as possible. This photograph in the upper right shows a rundo being cut by a flail mower. And you don't want to be near one of these things when it's working. Most of the Arundo removal occurs this way in the first year, subsequent years the practice will be to apply herbicide to the regrowth in order to kill off the rootstocks. And again, we're standing on cut Arundo here. There are patches of Arundo that are several acres in size that the project has already removed. The project provides significant improvements over the 2003-2008 program. The project supports the natural channel form of the river by maintaining secondary channels. It protects more habitat by avoiding the vast majority of the riparian habitat to begin with, placing secondary channels where they avoid high-value habitat as much as possible, and then modifying secondary channel locations on the ground to increase avoidance of high-value habitat. The project provides compensatory mitigation, which was not required for the 2003-2008 program. The project will remove more than 350 acres of Arundo, and the project includes a comprehensive monitoring program, including long-term effectiveness assessment. And the project has included extensive public outreach and stakeholder input. The project has undergone a long process of public engagement. The board conducted a public workshop in March 2014 for the purpose of hearing discussion about maintenance activities in the Salinas River. Staff presented an informational item to the board in September 2015. Water Board staff has provided several updates to the board on numerous occasions during the last 2 years. Staff posted notice of the 401 application back in January for 21 days. Staff has posted the draft certification itself on July 6th for a 23-day public comment period and notified the interested parties of the posting. Now, this is unusual for water quality certifications, but was done in order to give stakeholders and the public more opportunity to comment on the project. And that's finally, staff is presenting this informational item today. Oops, that's not what I want. Staff received one comment letter on the 401 water quality application from the Otter Project. A copy of that letter was attached to the staff report. Staff has reviewed these comments and incorporated them as appropriate into the certification. Staff also received several letters on the draft certification itself. The first came from the Monterey County Water Resources Agency, which is the applicant. A second letter was a joint letter from the Grower Shipper Association, the Salinas River Channel Coalition, and the Monterey County Farm Bureau, and received a third letter this morning from the Otter Project. Staff has discussed the agency's comments in detail because we got that letter first, and we are in agreement and expect to resolve all of these issues with the agency. Since the comments from the joint letter from Grower Shipper, Channel Coalition, and Farm Bureau echo the agency's comments or just ask for clarification of certification conditions, we're confident we'll be able to resolve those issues as well. The third letter from the Otter Project, as I said, came this morning. We haven't been able to dig into those comments very much so far, but from the look of things, we feel confident that we'll be able to work out whatever issues need to be worked out prior to issuance of the certification at the end of August. One of the issues will require a little more work, and that has to do with the long-term river management strategy requirement in the certification. That requirement was addressed in all three of the comment letters and will require substantially more work than the other comments submitted. The certification requires the agency to develop a long-term river management strategy that addresses, at the watershed scale, issues like flood risk reduction objectives, channel maintenance, optimization of ecological function, flow objectives supporting beneficial uses, management of the lagoon, long-term Arundo control, other issues like that. A timeline and topics for developing the strategy are due after 1 year, with a draft strategy due after 5 years, and the final strategy due 6 years after issuance of the certification. Staff finds a long-term management strategy important for several reasons. First, the project will play a major role in the health of the river due to its size and 10-year permit term. Secondly, the long-term management strategy will help us understand how the project affects the watershed as a whole and interacts with other management actions currently underway in the river in order to better ensure the project is protective of beneficial uses over the long term. A long-term strategy will provide information that can be used to improve the project in subsequent permit terms, and will also improve our understanding of the project's cumulative impacts and how they might be better managed in future permit terms. I apologize, I don't have a slide for this, but I was working on this morning. The agency, the grower shipper, the Channel Coalition, and the Farm Bureau are generally opposed to this requirement as it appears in the draft certification. The agency will explain its concerns in its presentation in a few minutes. Water Board staff has discussed this issue with agency staff and has identified several options for resolving the issue. Based on these discussions, we believe that we will be able to bring this issue to resolution. Options for resolving the issue range from removing the requirement entirely from the certification, or at the other end of the spectrum is leaving it in the certification as it is. But there are some middle ground options that we've also discussed, and they include lengthening timelines for development of the strategy and requiring actions in the certification that move toward developing the strategy rather than requiring development of the strategy itself. So that's one possibility. The second possibility would be to incorporate the long-term watershed scale assessment requirements into the effectiveness assessment requirements of the permit to shift things around, change the scope a bit, and make it part of some other things that are in the certification already. Or finally, we could replace the requirement with a finding that simply states that the Water Board finds that a long-term management strategy is a necessary prerequisite for any kind of renewal of this certification after 10 years. So we'll also be looking at options that combine various elements of those three options that I've listed, as well as anything else that is suggested. And again, I think we're confident that we'll be able to work out an acceptable solution. Following this informational item, staff will incorporate the board's input into the final certification. Staff will also review all public comments received and modify the draft certification as appropriate, and will prepare written responses to public comments. The executive officer will review the comments and staff's responses, as well as all modifications to the draft certification due to board input or public comments before issuing the final certification. Following issuance, staff will post the final certification, staff responses to public comments, and the draft certification indicating modifications made on the Central Coast Water Board website. Finally, staff will submit a summary of public comments and staff's responses to those comments, as well as a final copy of the certification as part of the executive officer's report to the board at the September board meeting. Slide we've all been waiting for, the conclusion. The project is conditioned in the certification achieves the Water Board's goal of protecting beneficial uses while also allowing the agency to reduce flood risk along the Salinas River. The project protects beneficial uses by protecting steelhead and their habitat. It protects high-value riparian habitat and mitigates for unavoidable impacts to high-value habitat. In addition, the project reduces flood risk to surrounding lands by reducing flood depth and the number of acres flooded. Staff anticipates that the project will result in an overall improvement in riparian habitat functions in the Salinas River. Staff expects the final certification will be issued by August 31st in time for the project activities to begin before September 1st. Unless otherwise directed by the board, the certification will be issued by the executive officer according to the typical procedure for issuing water quality certifications. Are there any questions or comments?
We have also a 30-minute presentation which was pre-requested a week ago. So because of the length of time, no, while things are fresh in everybody's mind, maybe it's appropriate, you know, to ask questions right now from staff, and then we go through the 30-minute other presentation and more questions, that way things don't get too diluted.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I thought you had said earlier that the final project impacts were anticipated to be somewhat different than the pilot project impacts.
That's correct.
Okay, and I didn't hear any further clarification of what that meant.
The main difference will be that in there are two selective treatment areas in the constrained reach down in the lower 20 miles of the river where maintenance will be conducted by a slightly different design. And that's because the river is so much narrower, the secondary channel approach really doesn't work. There isn't room for fitting in a secondary channel outside the low flow channel. So within these two specific areas, they're very finite, defined areas. The agency is going to take more of this patchwork approach that I described, hitting on certain areas, but not clearing everything within the whole band. So as we discussed before, and this is just a conceptual design. But for instance, they would do some work here, but leave this alone. Do some work here, leave this alone. So that's what I mean, that there's going to be work that is closer to, and some places even in the low flow channel, in these two selective treatment areas.
Well, those areas, haven't they already been treated?
No.
There were two reaches, river management units.
Okay, I misunderstood your question.
Yeah.
The areas that were treated under the demonstration project
right.
will be treated the same way under this current project. There won't be any changes there. The difference between the demonstration project and the current project is that the demonstration project didn't include any of this stuff that we're talking about right now in this slide. That's the only real difference between the two.
Boy.
Different locations, yes.
I thought that's exactly what I saw when I went out to see the demonstration projects was, you know, a patchwork
What you saw was something more like this, where it's a patchwork in the sense that this area is removed, but not this area. But here, what the removal is going to be continuous from an upstream connection point to a downstream connection point. What we saw, we hiked across some brush into a secondary channel area, and we looked upstream and we looked downstream, but we didn't walk the whole length of it.
So you're saying that then the secondary channels are going to be broader and longer in the main project that is before us?
The main project has 123 defined secondary channels. They vary in width between 100 and 200 feet. The demonstration project, I think there were 29 secondary channels within the demonstration project. And the way those secondary channels were maintained in the demonstration project is the way the secondary channels, the other 95 secondary channels will be maintained. There won't be any change, any difference between the way that what we saw for the demonstration project and for the other 95 secondary channels. But there will be a change, I don't remember if I'm up or down, there will be a change in two specific areas in the constrained reaches. Now, there are other areas in the constrained reaches that, we were able to fit secondary channels in. All right, so there's really only two distinct areas encompassing about 20 total acres.
Okay.
That are going to be treated in a different way.
Okay. All right. 330 acres of Arundo are going to be removed?
If all project impacts are realized, that's what the mitigation requirements would require, about 350.
Seems like a very small amount of Arundo when you're looking at like 94 miles
there,
of river.
About 1,500 acres of Arundo have been mapped in Monterey County. The mitigation requirements for this project fit the impacts of the project. It's not going to remove all the Arundo in the river. It's going to remove a significant chunk. There is another project ongoing in the river right now being run by the Monterey County RCD. The goal of that project is to remove all the Arundo north of the Monterey-San Luis Obispo County line. You'll hear some about that in the agency's presentation, and staff from the RCD are here to answer any questions about that you would like to ask.
And then when you use the term compensatory mitigation,
mm-hmm.
what are examples of that?
Well, for instance, we are requiring replacement of trees removed.
Okay.
We are also requiring Arundo removal for impacts to, we're not requiring it for impacts to weeds. We're requiring it for impacts to willow vegetation, native riparian vegetation. And the mitigation ratios vary, but that's the mitigation approach.
And how do you plan on resolving any issues with NOAA and NMFS with respect to what they want us to do to protect steelhead habitat?
We continue to be in conversation with them. They are finishing up their consultation for the entire project, and we'll be in conversation with them to see what they've come up with. If they think the project constitutes an adverse effect for steelhead, if they come up with that conclusion, then we will, since fish migration is a beneficial use that the Water Board protects, we will look at what their recommendations are and incorporate them as appropriate in the certification.
Okay. You know, one of the things that the board wanted to do is to have this item come before us mm-hmm. so that we would make the final decision. And because of timing and timing with respect to when the project could get implemented this fall, we kind of backed off that because we do think it's beneficial that they start working on it sooner than later, and they have a very narrow window of time to do this. But, you know, I have a lot of faith in you guys to protect beneficial uses foremost. I just want to, you know, make that known. Yeah. And I'm giving up, you know, what I think is something I would really want to, have a final review on. Anyway.
Ms. Grape?
So I just have a couple questions on the long-term plan. What is the actual purpose of the long-term plan and potential outcomes, since it seems like there's a lot of adaptation that is potentially going to need to occur? So I'm just curious what the substance of the long-term would be and what the timeline, the time horizon of that would be.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, first on the timeline, we've been in, over the last couple of days, we've been in close discussions with the agency, and they've made a pretty strong argument that the timeline that's in the permit isn't achievable for them. So, you know, we've already agreed to work with them on changing timelines. In terms of the purpose of the project, the long-term plan is to look at the project in the context of the larger watershed and all the different management actions that are occurring in that watershed to determine over the long term if the project can be improved. I mean, based on the information we have now and then with the time constraints we have now, we find that this project is supportive and protective of beneficial uses. But over the next decade, while the project is being implemented, we think that a lot more analysis can be done in terms of the larger watershed and all the different management approaches that are occurring and how they fit together and how the this project may be tailored to be better protective of beneficial uses.
Great. Yeah, I'm just curious about the utility of a long-term strategy when there is such dynamic changes. I mean, taking a whole watershed view, I think, is extremely wise. But are you revisiting that on an annual basis or a two-year basis?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure I followed your
so
question.
There's a plan. So my understanding is Monterey County has a plan to develop a long-term strategy, and that's parallel to this, or.
If they have a plan to do that would meet our intent and requirements.
Okay. I'm not asking the right question.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah, so the permit term is 10 years. There's also a requirement for a long-term strategy beyond that, correct? So,
yes.
So so I'm just curious what the substance is in a dynamic environment to have a long-term strategy and how that long-term strategy would be implemented over a longer term.
What the substance of the long-term strategy would be?
Yeah.
Okay, it would identify things such as, whether or not the loss of beneficial uses being incurred by this project are offset by the flood benefits that are being provided. Is the flood reduction goal that they've chosen as the design goal appropriate, worthwhile, effective, in light of all the other management actions that are going on in the watershed? Also, is the mitigation approach that we've chosen the best one, or can we take the resources that are going into that mitigation and can those resources be better used for some other mitigation approach that may be more beneficial to Steelhead? Those are some examples.
Okay, and so are those also going to be items that we're assessing on an annual basis through the reporting? I mean, I would imagine
I think to get to that point, it's a longer term project. And so the idea is that they develop the plan to get to that point, and we can and one of the things we've been talking with the agency about is maybe requiring some assessment, including some assessment steps in the certification to generate the information that might be used in the plan and maybe get less detailed about what the plan might require.
Okay. I guess I'm just concerned that we don't want to be duplicative, and if there is a long-term strategy, it needs to be really informed by the work that's being done, and it's an ongoing adaptive management process the whole way. So I think it's important to have a long-term strategy. I just don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, I guess. That's
okay.
My point.
And the long-term strategy has been discussed for years, and we think it's an important part of this project, and we're trying to get it started.
I agree. I'm just saying, even within the demonstration project, my understanding is you're going to have to nip and tuck here and there. So it's a constant adaptation, I guess, is my point. Thank you.
Mayor Delgado.
Thank you. Phil, following up on Jane's, some of her comments just now, on page 21 of the staff report, these blue papers, in the middle of the page, it says the Water Resources Agency has plans to develop a long-term strategy for the management of the river. So I guess we'll be hearing from the agency in a little bit here, but is it your opinion that they're already going to do this? They're already going to do some form of a long-term management strategy?
My understanding is that, yes, they plan to do it. But they, we'll let them talk to this, but my understanding is that, in their opinion, it's very early to be writing down things like objectives and goals and what it might include. And so I think they fully intend to do it, but they think it's too early and too nebulous to have as a permit requirement. And they also don't feel like we have the authority to require them to do it.
Okay. Well, I can understand that if you don't have a long-term plan, you may not get to where you want to go. And that if you don't know your objectives and criteria to meet those when you start a project, you're probably not in a good position for success. And to fold those into a long-term management plan should not require too much more effort than having them to begin with, so you know what you're shooting for when before you start on the ground work. Now, I could understand that their idea of a plan and the components of such a plan would, of course, probably be different than yours, because 10 people in a room would come up with a different plan. So just because they have plans for a strategy long-term doesn't mean that their long-term strategy would hit all the points that you want them to hit. So I would guess that there has to be some coordination between our agency and the Water Resources Agency to make sure that your needs in a long-term strategy are in the long-term strategy. Does that make sense?
It does, and that would be our intent. And to back up on this issue, just to be clear again, we've already had a lot of discussions with staff just for the last couple of days, and we acknowledge that there's work to be done on this issue. And we've identified some options to talk about, and when we intend to do that. But I agree with you that, yes, what they might do with a strategy and what we might want to see in a strategy might not always jibe, and that we do need to work together to make it work for both of us.
Okay. So when the Water Resource Agency representatives are here in a bit today, I'll be asking some similar questions, but I wanted to ask you while it's fresh in our mind what you're thinking. If you go to page 11 of 15 of the draft certification, it talks about the long-term river management strategy and the timelines. And by May 31st, 2017, it requires submittal of a timeline and interim objectives. And I would think that before they start work this fall, they would have a skeletal five-year timeline and interim objectives, because the initial work they do this fall would be toward those interim objectives, right?
I would think so.
So giving them a year or till May 2017 to give you the timeline and interim objectives, it doesn't sound onerous to me. You're not asking for the completion of a long-term strategy by a year. You're asking for the completion of a draft strategy in 2021, 4.5 years from now. So you're giving 4.5 years for a draft strategy that's long-term, and then a fifth year until 2022 before that long-term strategy needs to be finalized. Am I accurate in my assessment?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Do you think, after your recent day's discussion with the resource agency, that these timelines, these three time frames, are reasonable?
I think they're reasonable, but I think there's some gray area there, and I think it would be reasonable to extend them a bit as well. We thought they were reasonable. We wrote these dates in because we thought they were reasonable. We didn't want to be unreasonable in the dates we chose. They've since made some comments about their budget for the next fiscal year and their ability to fund some of this work over the next fiscal year. I think if their budget's set, that may hold some weight. I think the effort and the stakeholder involvement that would be necessary to develop the plan would be substantial. And so 4 years, you know, give or take some more time, I think would be fair as well.
Okay.
And so my intent was to talk to them about that.
All right. And John, in your slideshow, you mentioned 864 acres of riparian habitat could be adversely impacted.
It's 864 total area acres. Only about 460 is native riparian habitat. There's a rondo on these secondary channels. That's included in the 864 acres. There's bare ground. That's included in the 864 acres. So 864 acres is the total area encompassed by all of the secondary channel areas.
Okay. So my question is, of that 864, how much of that potentially impacted acreage is high quality habitat?
I can look up the number we could have it. It's 400 and some acres.
Okay,
that consists
good.
Of cottonwood forest and down to like mid-successional, early successional willow habitat.
Okay, that's great. You don't have to look it up. Thank you. So about half, right?
Correct.
Okay. My next questions are in the vein of wanting this project to succeed, because if it's not successful, then all the stakeholders will lose. So I'm not trying to be picky. I'm just asking these questions, trying to make sure that I think it's going to be successful. Regarding the Arundo management requirement, there's 5 years. Do the consulting experts think that Arundo control / removal over 5 years will have a long-lasting reduction or eradication of Arundo in treated areas? 5 years seems like a short period of time for this weed to be eradicated where treated. So that's my question.
And that's a good question. And we have some of those people here today. We've been in conversations with them. What they have found by experience in the Salinas River is that Arundo has come back in areas that they treated a number of years ago, but not in huge amounts. I mean, like 5, 10, 15% has come back, and so they've gone back and hit it again. So, and that was because that was without interim maintenance. They did it back in 2008, and then they went back in 2012 to see how it was doing. Now my dates are accurate. You'll be able to ask them, but they have gone back and done treatment, and there are measures built into the RCD project, for instance, funding sources. If a landowner says, "Hey, my Arundo is coming back," there's a mechanism for dealing with that. Under this project, mitigation requirements need to be commensurate with the impacts, and requiring eternal vigilance on Arundo removal areas under this project just isn't something that we can require.
Right. So that's the rub, is that eternal vigilance may be infeasible, but if after 5 years, I think one of the requirements here was that Arundo would be reduced to 1% of its former extent at a given site. So if after 5 years you've got 1% and you're done and you walk away because eternal vigilance is impractical, I could see at year 20 that 1% has grown back to what it was when you started, relegating your efforts completely worthless. And yet this is a long-term river management for the next couple hundred years. So even in the next 20 years, between the year 5 and the year 20, you could have reinvasion of Arundo where you spent all this time in monitoring, et cetera, and you got it down to 1% and then you walked away. So how would you reduce my concern about that?
Honestly, I don't know that I can. I'm not an Arundo expert. What I do know is that the agency plans to continue with this project. They don't plan to just do it this 10 years. They're going to come back to us 10 years from now and want us to recertify. So that there are ways for us to continue to keep an eye on Arundo in the river. If 20 years from now Arundo grows back, the agency is still wanting to do maintenance and is still going to be removing Arundo as mitigation for activities.
Okay.
So I don't think anybody's planning to walk away from this river. The agency plans to. I mean, there are still growers along the river that don't want flooding. You know, the agency is going to continue to want to maintain this river over the long term.
Okay, because along with the risk reduction piece of this project, the Arundo reduction, those are the two paramount performance measures in my mind. So that's why I think the Arundo is worth the time to discuss. I didn't see, I probably overlooked, in this 401 cert is the containment of Arundo within treated areas a requirement apart from mitigation? So what I'm thinking is you alter a secondary channel for risk reduction regarding floods, and in that earth moving activity you stimulate or make it more easily invadable by a rondo. A rondo comes in on some of these 120 plus channels. Is it required within the CERT to keep a rondo out of the treated areas, which it wasn't, where it wasn't present before the treatment?
Right now, the certification requires the same 99% reduction of rondo areas, even if that rondo was removed within a secondary channel area. So not just in the mitigation areas.
Okay.
But what you're describing is something a little different. They go in and they clear vegetation where it wasn't a rondo, and a rondo grows in that area. What I would say about that is that the agency is going to want to keep that secondary channel area free of vegetation for the next 10 years. That's what they're asking a permit for. So regardless of what grows back in that area, whether it's a rondo or willows or some other kind of weed, they're going to keep it clear.
Okay. Well, it'd be nice if that was explicitly included in the language that we don't want new Arundo sites as a result of 123 secondary channels being maintained, and that shouldn't be part of the mitigation. That should just be part of the project description, that we don't add to the problem by where we introduce new work, where it wasn't formerly a weed present. Can you go back to the slide you showed? It was titled Project Design Continued, and you had a few of those slides, but if you go to there, I'll tell you the one I want.
Say again what you're looking for?
A slide called entitled Project Design Continued.
There were several of those.
That's good. So where that secondary channel at kind of 11 o'clock, 11:30, where it goes back into the main channel, can you point downstream?
This is downstream,
yeah,
this direction.
Right, so going downstream, where that second, right there. So where that secondary channel flow would rejoin the low channel flow,
mm-hmm.
My question is whether the vegetated banks to the north of that convergence, right where the confluence is between those two channels, in that design, are those banks vulnerable to bank failure given the energy coming in from the two converging channels?
Without doing hydraulic analysis, I couldn't tell you for sure, but that is certainly something for anybody and an engineer to think about in this case. What would be true is that if this secondary channel is flowing, the low flow channel is flowing and is carrying more water. So what's going to happen is that this comes in, it's going to be redirected by the flow of the low flow channel and pushed downstream instead of just shooting right over here. There'll be some turbulence there for sure. And some of that's just normal for the river. The question might arise, is there more or less damage with this secondary channel? We think that by mimicking the braided channel form of the river by creating these secondary channels, the overall effect is going to be better for the river than not doing it and letting the river kind of smash its way down the river channel by itself. Channel bank erosion, secondary channel creation and loss, the river will create some, fill others. That's a natural process in this river, and we're not going to stop that, and we don't want to stop that by this project. This project's goal is to try to not rein in the horse, but at least provide some influence about how it behaves.
All right. So does the 2D hydrologic model that was done on the whole system look at the geomorphic results and potential erosion potential of all of this work? I mean, I would assume it did, but...
I think that would be a good question to ask the agency when they come up. The aspects of the design that I saw have more to do with what's going to happen with flood depths and a little bit with velocities. And certainly velocity affects fluvial processes. What the intention of the project is and what the model seems to show is that in general, velocities in the low flow channel are going to decrease slightly, because water has been directed into the secondary channels. So the overall effect should be a reduction in velocities rather than an increase in velocities.
All right, thank you. I wanted to hear you talk about it so I could learn more about it, because I'm sure people, they're much more intelligent than I on these issues, have figured that all out. I just kind of wanted to.
Well, I'm just parroting what I've heard from the agency too. So.
All right. When I met with Abby and Donna a couple days ago, one concern that I also shared after having it pointed out was on the section of the CERT, section B3, where it talks about sediment management activities in secondary channels have to be 30 feet away from developed areas. Mm-hmm. So my first question on page 3 of 15 at the bottom there, what's the definition of developed areas?
Well, the whole sentence says, shall not conduct activities within 30 feet of developed areas, including agricultural fields and farm roads. So what we're looking there is human activity that has altered the landscape beyond just creating banks and levees and things like that. So what we want is where pollutants could be introduced to river flows. We want that 30 feet buffer to be protected.
All right. Would levees be considered developed areas?
That's not the intent of this condition, but certainly levees are a result of human activity, and they could be called developed areas. But that's not the intent of this condition.
Okay, thank you. My last question in regards tree replacement, and if you have to take out trees, there's a 3-to-1 replacement requirement. And I talked about this in our briefing session, but I wanted to make a point in front of the rest of our board today. And I heard you mention that there will be some post-irrigation maintenance requirements, monitoring requirements, so that let's say you water these plants for 5 years, these replacement trees. At the end of 5 years, you stop watering them. Now you're into the post-irrigation phase. At that point, monitoring will continue, because naturally when you stop watering something after 5 years, you might assume there would be some changes, such as reduced health or mortality, when you stop giving them water. And so I just wanted you to affirm that I'm understanding now that you have some post-irrigation, and I was wondering how long a post-irrigation you were thinking.
Well, right now the certification requires at least 2 years without irrigation before the success criteria can be assessed. And the success criteria, well, we're looking at some other criteria, but we're thinking right now about requiring measurable growth in that last year of without having supplemental water. Most of these trees will be cottonwoods. They grow quickly if they're in contact with water. So if they're still growing in a noticeable way after they've been without water for 2 years, then that's a good sign that they have found the water they need.
Okay, and if the buy-off is given that 2 years post-irrigation they're doing well, successful mitigation, will there be any go-back to these areas to find out if after that post-irrigation you have a large significant die-off, so that in future permits there might have to be an increase of post-irrigation monitoring?
There isn't anything like that written into the certification right now. Now, the agency may tell you when they come up, but we're seeing die-off of mature cottonwood trees all over this river right now. I mean, the drought conditions are severe. Tree death is a natural process. These mitigation requirements are not intended to reforest the Salinas River. They're intended to replace trees that are taken out. So if we have 85% still growing after 5 years of growth and 2 years without supplemental irrigation, the mitigation requirements are designed so that there is still we can still afford some die-off after that, and still have more trees when we're done than we had when we started.
Okay, thank you. don't have any more questions, but I just want to comment that a lot of the time I was with Abby and Donna, they talked about section I, which addresses long-term effectiveness assessment plan components. And when I spoke with Phil Hammer yesterday, he mentioned that, yes, he's aware of a lot of those comments because they're also coming from the resource agency, and that there is time for all the staffs to get together and work through to a reasonable, you know, consensus on what that paragraph or what that section might end up being. So is that correct?
That's our understanding. We're confident that we'll be able to do that. It's going to take some work, certainly. You know, we're going to spend a lot of hours together over the phone and or in one another's offices, but we're confident we'll be able to do it.
All right. Well, thanks to you and everyone that's worked hard on this plan. I appreciate your work.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you. As I reviewed the staff report, I noted that public comment, rather than a specific response from staff, was noted to be included in section F. So I see a number of those issues addressed, but I did not see any comments or remarks on the involvement of the Nature Conservancy. And that led me to think about the partnership agreement, what that looks like. And it would seem to me that as a regional board, I'm not sure that we can require who's in the partnership and who's in not, but I don't have information about how that partnership is formed and what the intent and commitment has been of the partner members. So what can you tell me about the one comment suggesting that without the Nature Conservancy,
Could I just mention that the Nature Conservancy is going to be speaking?
Yes, I wanted to understand from staff, though, because they didn't respond to it in the report.
Well, it was tucked into a discussion of the adaptive management and things of the project. But one thing I want to say about that, and the question has to do with, will this project fall apart and cease to be protective of beneficial uses if the Nature Conservancy doesn't remain part of it? And I want to point out that this project is different from all of the other channel maintenance programs that I have worked with at the Water Board. And one very important fact, and that fact is that these maintenance areas are already designated, defined, mapped, and everything. Most of the stream maintenance programs I work on have something like, well, we want to remove about this much kind of anywhere, and we won't really know until it happens.
Right.
And that's just not the case here. It's in these areas. It will always be in these areas over the next 10 years, and it'll never be anywhere else unless Water Board staff approves the change. So there isn't this kind of wide road where the applicant could kind of run amok, you know, if they had a tendency to do that. I don't think they do have a tendency to do that. But this design is so much more limited and controlled than any other stream maintenance program I've ever worked on.
Well, I mean, I appreciate the partnership and the commitment that's being made, but it seems to me that the stakeholders involved and the long-term nature and historically long-term challenge of this problem is something that has drawn upon resources and expertise of many stakeholders.
It certainly has.
I would assume that the role of the Nature Conservancy is, you know, crucial in this particular phase, but I just wanted to hear from staff about, you know, how you saw that going forward. Likewise, in terms of the involvement of many stakeholders from different organizations, including the landowners, county, the Water Resources Agency of the county. In terms of the long-term effectiveness plan or assessment and the long-term strategy, you mentioned that there are other watershed level projects going on, or there are other projects that are addressing the Salinas River maintenance in different areas of the river. Are we, in terms of those long-term planning processes, is the regional board staff working as closely with those other projects? Will we see lessons learned being folded into this broader, wider look at the long-term priorities, and you know, how much of a role will we be playing in those others, those other projects?
We've currently been involved in them very closely, and I expect that to continue. An example would be lagoon management. That's a pretty contentious issue, dealing with the breaching of the lagoon and to reduce flooding, but it also has a significant impact or potential impact on steelhead. And we're consistently at the table during those meetings. Pure Water, Monterey, mm-hmm. You know, other projects like that, we're involved deeply. You know, staff is regularly involved in those, and we intend to continue.
With that experience, with that view, with those, with that understanding of what's going on in these different management efforts, will that be reflected in the long-term strategy? In other words, will you be a conduit to help move those lessons learned to coordinate so that there is some benefit of all of these various projects underway?
Otherwise,
it seems to me like, you know, people doing one thing over here, people doing other thing over here.
Yeah, that's the entire intent of the requirement to develop a long-term plan, is to collaborate and look at this system holistically, and you know, see where the most benefit. You know, just an example that I mentioned earlier, but that comes to mind is like when we're doing mitigation for all these different projects. You know, where would the most benefit be, and should we do that mitigation piecemeal for each project, or should we make a mitigation concept and take the money and do and use it where it would be most beneficial? And right now, I don't think that's happening, and I think that should happen, and that's the desire and the intent of the plan. And
so, but as regional board staff, you're in a position to help ensure that that remains an awareness and an intent, that it really is being coordinated at a watershed scale.
Yeah, that's our intent. I think our history involved in this project shows we're committed to this area and the Salinas River. We've been really involved in this project in particular. And yeah, that's our intent.
Thank you.
So a couple of simple questions. The first one is, you know, we have a lot of history here with staff. We've been here on the regional board for many, many years. So maybe collaboratively you can answer this question. In your experience in this Regional Water Quality Control Board, how many other 401 cert have gone and are going to this level of depth and breadth in pre-work?
I've been working on 401s since the year 2000 at two different regional boards, and I'm not aware of any where we've spent this much time and effort. But this is potentially the largest impact as well, so mm-hmm. I think it's well warranted.
Okay. So let's see, Lisa back there, you got any experience too? Or okay. So it's basically, this is about the largest 401 project in terms of footprint, and I would assume, and then concurrently, the project that has required the most significant amount of pre-engineering work and staff time.
So far. Now, I'm excited to mention that we have, that there is an engineering project we've received an application for now from the Santa Clara Valley Water District to redesign and reconstruct the Yagas Creek watershed in South Santa Clara County, and that's going to be an enormous project. And I've been working with them since 2012 on that project. So that's also one that we are involved in early stages and things like that. But yeah, that's the only one I can think of that compares with our involvement
and
in this project.
You know, what I was trying to do is to educate myself in terms of you know, how this particular project compared to others we've done before when we talk about lessons learned, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Then my other question, and maybe it might be more appropriate to ask the question when, you know, the partners of this project come to speak, and they have a 30-minute request, by the way, in a chronological order, but budget, because, you know, there's 5 years of active work and then the extension for future work. But, you know, if you're going to build a 10-story building, you better have the fund for the 10th floor and not stop on the second floor. So I sort of look at this project a little bit that way. And hence the reason why you have a 5-year permit here and not a permit that is 1 year or 2 years, because you're building something very large. So what's the assurance that, you know, there is adequate budget to do this, and then it's not going to end up, say, gee, we ran out of money, so we're stopping, and then all of these things we're talking about fall apart. So, you're welcome to say, Jean-Pierre, you better ask the question to the folks that are coming to the mic, but that's definitely a question I want to know, and if you have had any discussion and assurance of the economic sustainability of this 5-year certification.
We've had some conversation, and since most of the work is being done by the landowners rather than the agency, mm-hmm. there are a lot of legal agreements between landowners and the agency for how the work will be funded, how the mitigation will be funded and paid for and monitored and things like that, and I'll let them talk about that. But one of the things that we do typically as staff, and you look at the certification, that the mitigation for impacts needs to be implemented within 12 months of the impact, so that the mitigation and restoration track the impacts. We're not going to be in a situation where they did all the impacts, but the money ran out before they did the mitigation. And that's something that we're conscious of and intentional about. We're concerned about temporal losses, but we're also concerned about don't get ahead of yourselves in these projects and run the risk that you won't be able to keep pace with the mitigation activities.
So what you're saying is that the phases of a project will be done such that you're going to do X amount of miles, and within these X amount of miles, you're going to cover all the measures discussed before you move to the rest. Because, again, my analogy of construction, mm-hmm. you know, you can put the skeleton of a 10-story building, you know, you put up the red iron, and then you walk off, and you have these big ugly mess, because you haven't done this in stages. So I understand what you're saying, but are they then going to do this in tranche, where it is assured that within these segments of creek, all the measures, including mitigation, are taken care of before you move to the next one, since this is going to be done over 5 years, and it sounds like, you know, the full budget for 5 years is not established, and, you know, it's going to be passing the hat as you go.
Well, the project is based on an annual routine where they propose the work they're going to do every year, and mm-hmm. we review it and approve it, and part of our review and approval of the work that's proposed is a review of the work that's been conducted. We won't approve more work until we've reviewed, you know, what they've reported on and ensured that they're, you know, with last year's work is all buttoned up and taken care of and in compliance. That being done, then we move on to the next phase. So I think that's a nice feedback loop that gets to the point that you're raising.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We're good.
I'll hold my questions until after we've heard from the agency. I do have a couple of brief comments. The first is, as a, you know, in the last 28 years I've lived in the Monterey Bay region, I've watched all the repeated battles over channel clearing both in the Salinas and the Pajaro River. And the number of times people have, you know, literally come to blows, come to litigation, And you know, I just want to compliment our staff for the role they've played in this. The Water Management Agency and the stakeholders, ranging from the ag entities to the Otter Project, the Nature Conservancy. I just think this is so markedly different from anything we've seen in the past. It is so head and shoulders above it. I mean, I realize that there the devil's in the details and there's still stuff to be worked, but I'm just really impressed by the process. My second comment is that you know, there's been a lot of concern as to whether we get to the second floor of the five-story building and suddenly people lose interest. You know, I have to say, absent some pretty unforeseeable cataclysm, given the nature of that land in the Salinas Valley, somebody's going to be farming it. And whoever's farming it is going to be very concerned about flooding and very motivated to continue, you know, to keep this river, you know, to keep those flood impacts low. So, you know, I guess I'm somewhat less concerned that the energy is going to suddenly go away. You know, that they're going to clear the Arundo and it's going to come back and they're not going to worry about keeping it out of the channel, because, I mean, there's a reason that folks have fought so hard to do channel clearing in the Salinas River, because it impacts their livelihood. And that's going to continue to be something that will drive this. My third comment, I really don't want to get into nitpicking about or wordsmithing, but I'm looking at attachment 2 here, which is a map of the boundaries of the project. And, you know, my mom's family was born up in the top of that map around Tres Pinos, and they would be very surprised to learn that that area is now in Santa Clara County. So, a little nit to pick. That's all I've got.
Well, I guess it all depends on the tax base, huh?
Redistricting, you know. Sorry about that.
No, I'm also holding off on questions just because my concern had to do more with some of the challenges that the agency might be confronting in terms of meeting some of the long-term planning processes, but it's come up, you know, funding being a major concern, but there of course being other efforts as well in terms of coordinating with the multiple stakeholders and agencies, and that also perhaps being part of the reason to delay some of these dates of implementation.
All right, so I appreciate Mr. Johnson's comment. I think there was a pretty solid observation you made about, you know, the value of the land in that area, so I thank you for that. And what I propose we do is we take a lunch break now before the next round of speakers. I think chronologically this will make good sense. And I would like to suggest 30 minutes lunch. Well, we have 30 minutes of speaker cards, plus we have some additional speaker cards, plus it sounds like my fellow board members are warming up to more questions, should I say? So I think it's prudent to do lunch right now. Are we... Okay, you want 45 minutes? Okay, what we'll do is, 45 minutes, okay? Yeah, no problem, good.
Good Mexican food place, right?
Yeah, so 45 minutes, and so we'll be back at 12:45. Thank you.